We Talk Wrestling is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. Check out the Geek Nation Tours New York Comic Con package, combining all the excitement of the convention with a tour of the city and the coolest sights for the superhero fan. You'll recognize locations from films and books and visit geek culture sites like Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Let me introduce you to these fellows, to the morgue. One name is Addy, the other is Mo. Addy's a dick and Mo's just that. Remember that, these fellows to the morgue. They're gonna talk wrestling. They're gonna make some jokes. Remember Addy's a dick, Mo's just fat. Addy's a dick and Mo's just fat. Let's talk wrestling. We talk wrestling. We talk wrestling. We talk wrestling. We talk wrestling.
Hey yo, and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mo. Hey yo, I'm Addy. Special co-host today, Bastion Booger.
Addy put chips in the room.
Uh-huh. But we just had, like, a whole big Arby's dinner.
Yeah, that's chips.
Oh. That's true. That's true. I should have known better. Well, let's get this show on the road. Or in the house, or in the studio, as it were.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Booger, you had mentioned you would like to talk about Dolph Ziggler.
Who?
Dolph.
All right.
Ziggler.
I'm putting my bag on ship away for a few minutes.
Yes.
I'm getting into talking about wrestling.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Ahmed Johnson, ladies and gentlemen.
Those are good chips.
Oh, yeah?
We should just do a show on them. We talk chips.
They're all gone.
No, they're not. There's plenty there. Don't worry. You'll hear it again later in the show.
Oh, good.
That Arby's was just a snack.
Audio quality at its finest.
So, yeah. So here's what you do.
So here's the deal.
What you have is you have Kevin Owens.
We do.
Mm-hmm. And you have very few people that are at all over or good on your roster. So what you want to do there is not have anything for him.
Right.
And when you don't have anything for him, what you want to do there is go, fuck, come up with something. And you say, oh, I'll just put him against this guy. And then you put him against this guy and have him lose clean on Raw, and then nobody gives a fuck about Kevin Owens anymore. Welcome to your feud with Dolph Ziggler.
Yes. So, I guess the big question on everybody's mind coming out of all of this is, the fuck did you expect?
Well, and here's the thing. Okay, no, seriously. The thing is, you have
a shitty booking team.
Well, you do have a shitty booking team, but right now your top two heels, like, because Sheamus flamed out.
Yes.
As a ginger usually does.
Right.
You know, Sheamus didn't work out as the top heel. So your top heels are probably Bray Wyatt and Kevin Owens.
Yes.
So, it comes back to what we talked about before with Rusev. When he had lost to Cena, if they had kept him strong, they could have main evented him again 4 to 6 months later against somebody else.
Right.
But instead they brought him down the card.
Yes.
I mean, that's what they do. Kevin Owens now.
Yes.
Is still your number two heel.
Yes.
So what you think is, oh, you're going to take him against, we don't have anything for him. Number one, why don't you have anything for him?
Yes.
I'm worried he's going to be the winner of the 20-man Honor the Giant over-the-top battle royal at this point. And I'm serious. I actually think he's going to win that. I think that'll be his WrestleMania.
The Butthole Royal?
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Like, I think that's the best they got for him. And this might be leading into all that. Who knows? But you have this guy. So you're sitting there and you're like, okay, well, nobody will buy Dolph Ziggler against him. So what we got to do is we got to put Dolph Ziggler over him to raise, elevate Dolph Ziggler to the point where people think he can beat him.
And now
that's where you're
stupid.
Now Dolph
Ziggler's great.
Exactly. Dolph Ziggler, he isn't elevated. All that happened is you brought down one of your few potential stars. There is a very limited guys between now and next year's WrestleMania, including next year's WrestleMania. There's a very limited amount of guys that Kevin Owens should lose to. It's okay for him to lose to probably maybe Randy Orton, maybe. Even then I wouldn't say so. Roman Reigns.
KO versus RKO.
Brock Lesnar, obviously.
Brock Langston.
AJ Styles. Yes. Sami Zayn. Maybe Samoa Joe. That's probably about it.
Like, even that's guys, all.
Like seriously, that's the only guys that he should be able to lose to. At all.
Yeah.
Like, you know, guys like Ziggler and Neville and no, he shouldn't be losing to these guys, frankly. No matter how talented they might be, he shouldn't be because of where they're placed on the card.
You know who's
and you know, even then he shouldn't be, and a guy like Cena or fucking Ambrose or these
fucking
guys.
Fucking Ambrose.
That he's already lost to multiple times, he shouldn't be losing to them again.
Well.
So, I mean, that's it. You got, this is, it's just,
I just look at, like, we know who one of the lead writers is now on the show.
Who?
And that's the Road Dogg.
Yeah, he's the lead writer on SmackDown.
Road Dogg, a big fan of country music. Country music superstar with My Baby Tonight. But his
idea...
What
was the second one that he did when he released his own?
Oh, yeah. I remember it happened.
Yeah.
And he sang it at the Slammy.
Yeah. What the fuck was it called?
Awful.
My Baby Tonight was terrible, but this
With My Baby Tonight was a pretty great song.
No, it was awful. It was catchy. Compared to this next one.
Yes. Well, now he's gone back to the classics.
Yeah.
Because they've asked him to book the mid-card.
Yeah.
Right? They've asked him to book the upper mid-card, and so he just looked at Vince and said, all you ever do is bring me down, making me a fool all over town. Jerry Lawler, they wonder why I wear a crown. I'm a shitty booker, so all I do is bring you down. That's what it is, though. It's this, it happened to Kevin Owens. It'll happen to AJ Styles.
I understand you don't have it, but here's the thing. I understand you don't have anything for Kevin Owens. That's fine.
No, it's not.
Well, actually, it's not.
No,
you're right,
it's
you're right.
not. No, if you're going to be pissed at anything, it's that they didn't put fucking three goddamn baby faces in a main event fucking match, and they don't have their top fucking heel in the match. Then the fucking Intercontinental Champion. Former Intercontinental Champion.
I agree. I know what you're saying. But I understand that they don't have anything for him, but due to injuries. Due to injury, everything's being thrown into a flux. I get that. You don't have anything, and you can have anything not for a little while. That's fine. That's okay. Like, but the point is, because he's at a certain level in the card, if he's going to face a guy like Ziggler, he should beat him. And if Ziggler's whole thing is, you beat me this time, I want another shot, I want to prove I can beat you, then he should lose again. It should be about Ziggler's trying to beat this guy and not being able to because this guy's better than him.
Yes.
That's a fine storyline because it doesn't hurt either one of them.
And then
to tell you the truth.
Finally.
This hurts somebody.
Finally.
Their only way to build a feud is to go, well fuck, nobody thinks he can beat him, so we better have him beat him. Who gives a fuck? Tell a story instead.
Finally, you have Dolph Ziggler beat Kevin Owens with help from Miz, forming the Cleveland Cocksuckers.
I do like that team.
That's their tag team.
That team, that would be a great, they should really be a tag team. The Cleveland Cocksuckers.
Cleveland Cocksuckers. But
they could be managed by Jerry Lawler.
The thing is I didn't expect anything different.
No.
I half expected.
In fact, if anything, it's amazing they've taken this long to fuck him up.
I wasn't expecting Kevin Owens to lose on Raw. I wasn't expecting that. But when it happened, I was like, oh, alright, just another guy.
Just another guy, and that's exactly what you gotta avoid.
So, speaking.
That's my rant.
Your rant.
Okay.
Another guy.
You're just trying to blow people's fucking ears out.
What are you talking about? Yeah, with my rustling of a chip bag.
Have some more. You have a rant you want to do.
Speaking of just another guy, WWE has your opening card. You have your comedy tag team. You've got your massive mid card. You have no upper mid card, and then you have your other guys. And the new
comedy tag team that
another.
I'm sure. And I know you're going with it just now. I know who you're going with. They turned somebody who was an actual star into
just another guy named Brock Lesnar. There is nothing, absolutely nothing special about Brock Lesnar anymore. Just another guy. He's a top guy. Sure. He's at the top of the card there, see. But the aura that was Brock Lesnar, the specialness that was Brock Lesnar, the comes in every now and again, whoops some ass, and goes into important matches, Brock Lesnar is done.
Yes and no, I'll agree with you. Because if you look at where he was and how over he was 1 year ago compared to now, you're right. But if you look at where he was 2 years ago, he's about the same level. And they were able to build him back up.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it's completely done, but
they weren't able to build him back up. The Undertaker helped to build him back up.
Well, they fucking booked it.
No,
last minute.
Yeah.
But they did, and after that they used it fairly well. But you're right, it's the same thing. In order to keep him special, his presentation is what it is. Mm-hmm. His presentation.
Yes.
And putting him in and having him F5 somebody that people really, really like, when they already like him, and you got three baby faces going against each other, and, like, okay, let's look at this. Okay, you got the three baby faces in this match.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that the only way Brock's going to lose is by...
Super dicks explode.
We know the way that the Brock is going to lose is because Bray Wyatt's going to get involved. So what does that do for Brock? Makes him just look a guy who lost because they've screwed him now twice at Royal Rumble and at this pay-per-view, which makes him look like a dork and not dominant like he was.
Right.
Right? And it also means that your guy who's going to be going on to face Triple H at WrestleMania backdoored his way into it, which, guess what? Doesn't do anything for him.
No, but it can get you in the WWE Hall of Fame.
True. Backdooring way in?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sonny.
Well, I was thinking Pat Patterson. Mm-hmm. But, no, I just look at, you've got this, let me tell you how this is gonna go. Let me tell you how this fucking thing plays out there, eh?
Okay.
Ambrose has gotten F5.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So now, Ambrose, next week, is going to accidentally hit Roman Reigns.
Uh-huh, probably.
With something.
Yeah.
Some bullshit. And then, and only then, a Jedi will you be.
Yeah.
The go home to this pay-per-view will be a Superman punch laying out just another guy.
Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
Probably.
Because everybody's gonna get their shit in. Oh, he beat him up and he beat him up and that guy beat him up. No. That's a great story. It is a great story. For fucking Samoa Joe, Sami Zayn, and Baron Corbin.
It'd be fun.
A fucking great story.
Yeah. No, the thing is, again, nobody's getting the rub out of this. Even Dean Ambrose standing up to Lesnar the way he did, didn't do anything for Lesnar.
You know what this is reminiscent?
You know, it does something for Ambrose, but it doesn't do anything for Lesnar. You gotta fucking protect him. There's other ways that you can build up Ambrose.
This is reminiscent to me of that match that was for all the belts in 1995, where it was two dudes with attitudes against Owen Hart and Yokozuna. It ended up being Yokozuna and Davey Boy.
Yeah.
But, where it was like, these were your top stars.
Yeah.
And everybody was just beating everybody, and nobody got over.
But somehow it doesn't have the comedy level, but it feels to me like the one I feel like is the triple threat between Michaels, Triple H, and Cena. Even though that was built up in comedy, it's still the same thing in that nobody is getting the momentum coming out of it. yeah. going into it or coming out of it.
Exactly.
And that's what you're, and again, I don't mind if you're gonna book the three of them in there, but what it should be is Lesnar destroying people, Reigns destroying people, and Ambrose destroying people, leading into the match that you're going, these are three guys of momentum who are gonna face each other now. Yeah. Even then, I wouldn't have booked it. But at least that's something. Yeah. What you have here, you're right, you're probably gonna have just another guy laid out with the Superman punch. What it should be is, again, remember when Cena and Michaels were facing each other at WrestleMania?
Yeah.
And it was, when the fuck is he gonna turn on him?
When's he gonna do it? Keep teasing it.
And then finally, last second, right before the go home show, last minute, that's when it happens after they lose the tag team titles.
Yeah.
That's what it should be with Ambrose and Reigns. It's like, you'll still be my brother, but at some point where I'm going to do whatever I got to do to win, and it might be before you think it is.
He's my sidekick.
Yeah, he's that. Well, that was funny.
Don't be,
but you know, that's what it should be. It should be people are, because that's something people are actually anticipating and waiting. Yes. There's nothing to anticipate here.
No. And really what it should be is it should be Brock Lesnar F5's Dean Ambrose, Brock Lesnar F5's Roman Reigns, then Brock Lesnar F5's both of them on the go-home show.
Yep.
So Lesnar stands dominant, and then he's gonna get fucked out of it by the Wyatts.
Yeah.
So, but he doesn't look
weak. So he doesn't look weak, because you cannot afford, but they don't want Reigns to look weak.
Exactly, that's the problem.
And Ambrose is there to take the pin, but they don't want to have him look weak going into it, because then everybody's going to think he's going to take the pin.
Which,
again, not even just from the storyline point of view of why the fuck
would
even allow Reigns to be in there.
Yeah.
But just from a booking point of view, is how are you going to get out of this? You backed yourself into a corner on so many levels, and you're doing the same things, like I say, with Kevin Owens. When you're having him lose, now you're not going to have that strong heel when you need him next to face Reigns.
Yes.
All of that, you know, there's no forward thinking, long-term thinking, or backward thinking, there's no long-term thinking, there's no short-term thinking. I don't know who could explain this.
They will not think on a plane. They will not think on a train.
I don't know who could explain this to us. Other than Vince Russo maybe? Like, that's the only person I think could explain to us what they're doing.
Let's call them.
Really?
Why not?
Okay, hold on. Wait. Bring! Bring!
God bless you, hello.
Is this Vinny Roop?
Mo, I have been waiting to talk to you.
Oh, I'm so glad. The reason we're calling you, Vinny Roo, there is we're looking to get you to explain
how
the booking of Raw.
First off, how is your DDP yoga going?
Did I tell you I was doing that?
I had just assumed, because last time I saw you, you were a fat fuck.
So, can you explain to us what they're doing with Brock Lesnar? Because it seems to me like he's lost momentum.
Have you been watching that show? Have you been watching Monday Night Raw?
Yeah, all 3 hours.
It is 3 hours.
It's a 3 hour show. You might have thought it was only 1 hour.
It is Monday.
But actually they have three.
It is a fantastic show.
What?
I am really enjoying the Monday Night Raw.
Yep. What's that?
It is exciting.
No, it's not.
There are a lot of intricate storylines.
No.
You just don't know where they are going next.
Well, I don't, because they don't know where they're going next.
I am, and they are creating a whole crop of new stars.
Well, like Brock Lesnar, like I say.
Like,
explain to me what they're
social
doing.
Outcasts.
Yeah, they're getting out a lot of momentum.
They are stars.
All of them.
All five.
Five?
There is Bo Dallas.
Oh yeah.
There is Curtis Axel.
Yeah.
There is Heath Slater.
Mm-hmm.
There is Adam Rose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there is Flo Rida. Bo Rida. Who's that?
Alright, Beaver, I can't talk to you anymore.
Do you want to know why they are doing what they are doing in the storylines with Brock Lesnar?
Oh, yeah, actually, that's why I'm
the only reason they are doing it, and it's very simple, Mo, and I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
It is very simple.
Yeah.
They are doing it for the ratings.
Oh. And those ratings are great, and what about AJ Styles? What about him in the ratings?
AJ Styles is my Christian buddy.
Thanks. All right.
See you later, Vinny.
Vinny Roo.
Oh, not for fuck's sakes. speaking of cocksuckers.
Yeah.
Wow.
And The Miz.
They just don't, it's just...
Actually, I like The Miz and AJ Styles section. I like that segment.
Fuck.
I liked it.
Oh yeah. It was wonderful.
Yeah. I liked it.
Oh, he's gonna put it and then he's not gonna let him talk.
That a million times, but
yeah.
The point is AJ's facial expressions were good. So AJ's performance, not The Miz, AJ's performance was good and actually got people behind him, and then when he beat the shit out of him, he did it with real baby face fire, and then he was like, I belong here afterwards and all that stuff, and the crowd was chanting for him. Mm-hmm. He made it. I didn't say I like this segment. I didn't say I like The Miz. AJ was great though.
It was boring as fuck. And it went on forever. And I fast forwarded, and then I saw that AJ was on the ramp. So I rewound a little bit and was like, oh, okay, you beat him up. Okay.
Well, let's see, that's it. You didn't catch this. You're not a patient man. Or smart.
I watched it.
Or good looking.
I watched it for 5 minutes. And then fast
you
forward
gotta
the
watch
next
it.
10.
It's all about AJ's selling it. His performance, his facial expression says,
it's about me being entertained as a viewer, and I'm not, so clickety-click, click and click.
Like a train going out of track?
That's right. Like all the way down to Georgia.
I gotta call Vinny Roo again.
Gainesville, Georgia.
Alright, well, I liked
it. Right outside of Osaka.
And then he used the cap cutter to get the win against The Miz on SmackDown, so he's got both finishing moves. That's cool.
Yes. Yep. He's only wrestled really on SmackDown other than the Jericho thing.
Yeah. And then, he hasn't used the Bloody Sunday DDT yet. I'm wondering if he's going to do that.
And then Jericho challenged him to next week on SmackDown.
Yeah.
Listeners
coming to SmackDown. That would be for ratings.
That will be huge for the ratings. Yeah, just another guy coming to SmackDown.
Just another guy. Alright. I think I've had enough talking about WWE.
Yeah! Lucha Underground.
They're getting another season.
They are, and I watched the first one.
You watched the very first ever episode because
we get that now.
We get the TV, it's debuted on TLN up here in Canada. So we were looking forward to it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch some Lucha Underground. And then we saw it was a three-hour block.
It said for 3 hours, so we're thinking, good, they're going to catch up there.
Yeah, do some sort of recap show for season one. And instead...
Well, I even thought maybe they'd be showing all, like, season... Like, I thought we'd get episode 1, 2, and 3, and then 4, 5... Like, if there's 40 episodes of the season, then it would take, like, 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And you'd be caught up to... And then, you know what I mean? And then that would catch up.
Yeah.
Instead...
Actually, it'd be 13 weeks in one show.
But sure.
That's okay.
Sure. That'd be neat. But
math is good.
Instead, what we got was this 3-hour block that had Lucha Underground, then it had some show, and then it had a replay of Lucha Underground again.
Yeah.
So, and then, because TLN apparently, or I'm not sure if TLN or Shaw are complete fucks.
I'd say TLN.
But Lucha Underground is not on anymore.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I think that's TLN, that may be Shaw.
Yeah. Either way.
It's probably TLN.
So what I did, but then I go on TLN's website, and it says it's on every Sunday at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So fine. I taped whatever the fuck TLN said. Was
I
on
set
the
series to record. Yeah.
I did. I set the series to record. No, but then whatever show it says is on at 8 o'clock next Sunday, I recorded that.
Oh, good.
So then I could watch. So then hopefully Lucha Underground's on, even though it says it's not, and I can just watch that.
Yeah. So what did they think of the show?
So.
You talk about it.
I watched.
I've seen about 10 minutes since I've had
chips. Right. It says original munchies. That sums you up.
Yeah.
I watched this show with the producer.
Oh shit, really?
My loving wife, because I told her that this Lucha show, she likes the Lucha, she likes Kalisto.
Yeah, she likes gymnastics.
She likes gymnastics and she knows Kalisto goes Lucha, Lucha, Lucha. So, when I told her that there's a show called Lucha Underground, she's like, Lucha! So she wasn't overly excited, but then I told her I'm watching it. I'm watching this at 8 o'clock. So, I'm kind of checking to make sure this is okay, but I'm gonna do it anyway. So, as it turns out, I recorded it. I didn't get to watch it right at 8 o'clock. I was doing something else and it's fine. I'm like, okay, it's recorded. So, we're like, what do you want to do? Well, let's go watch TV in bed. So, we're kind of tired, but not really tired. So anyway, so then we watched it. So it's like, what do you want to watch?
Of course.
Oh. So she watched two of you. And at first she's like, what is this? Because it's all Spanish soap opera-y thing. Mm-hmm. And so like at the beginning where they're in a cave and they're, you know, the Aztec people are coming around, she's like, what is this? I'm like, it's wrestling. Like, you'll see. So they show it, and then,
I said before, it's not a wrestling show.
No.
It's a TV show about wrestling.
Yes. And so she's like, oh, this is like a, you know, like a soap opera. I'm like, yeah, kind of. It is wrestling, so it's cool. And, so we watched it.
Yeah.
And then it got to, Puma and, Johnny Mundo.
Yeah.
In that match. That was really the only, they had a couple like quick matches, but that was like the main event, right?
Yeah.
So that was the big match. And like, 2 minutes into this match, the producer looks at me and goes, this is so much better than the shit you usually
She's right.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, we've said this for a while. It's being renewed. They've gotten a third season now.
Yes.
There are ways you can find it. This should gain some momentum. This isn't the same. If you're sitting there and you're like, oh, I'm just a WWE guy, that's what I like.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, fuck, then don't watch it as a wrestling fan. Watch it as a fan of, like, good TV shows, because it's a TV show.
Yeah.
It's different. But it's fresh, and it's different. It's got enough in there for the wrestling fan, but enough in there to appeal to people that aren't wrestling fans, too.
Yeah.
Because it's a really, the production values are tremendous.
They are.
And the camera work and the, just the look and the acting and all this show it's just really good. And you know what? It gets better and the storylines get more intricate and some of them get a bit more ridiculous because it has got that Spanish soap opera thing.
That's fine.
But it's fine, yeah.
I just found it really hard to find online. You know, like I don't do any of that torrent downloading shit anymore, not with streaming. And so it's just like trying to find it on like a Daily Motion or YouTube. Like it's El Rey has a station on YouTube, but it ain't on there. And
I found it on Daily Motion, but it was hard to find. It'd be gone. It'd be there. It'd be back. So, you know.
So
trying to see it in order, it was a pain in the ass.
Well, that's because. So I'm just gonna wait now and watch as I go.
Yeah.
Because it's gonna be on TLN anyway, so I might as well just But. Yeah. It was enough that I started looking to see, can I watch the rest of season one now?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like, if you could binge watch this, if this was, like, it's now going to be on iTunes.
I don't know how much, for it.
Yeah, I don't know how much it would be, but too much. Because you're already getting
it. Should be on, like, Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
It should be, right?
It should be on a Netflix or something like that, a Crackle or anything. There's a streaming place, so you should be able to binge watch it.
Yes.
Binge watch the whole season. That's how this is meant to be.
Speaking of, did you see
but this? But this is, it's closer to, like it's closer to, name a TV show, like it's closer to something than WWE.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Well.
Yeah. Puma kind of reminds me of Carlton.
Puma's awesome.
Yeah.
I was thinking more, I don't know.
You're just thinking of like the commish?
The Equalizer, yeah.
You've had something?
What was that show that was just on Badlands or whatever?
Oh, I think you know Barney Miller.
It was on AMC or whatever.
Oh yeah, Badlands. Yeah.
It's more like something like that. It's, you know. Fuck off, this is, well, we lost momentum completely. But the point being, Lucha Underground's so much better than the shit you usually watch.
Yes. Yes. And so, anyway, so we can't wait to see the next one.
Even she's looking forward to it.
I'm a viewer. We're both viewers. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what has always kind of been said about it, is if they can just get more people to watch it, people will
watch it because it's
a good TV show.
Yeah. To me, it's like Ring of Honor. It's like wrestling. And so,
yeah,
you know, like, now that we get it, it's like, and I watch it, it's like, I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh.
I like it.
But it's like, if I had to go online or, you know, hear about it, it's like, yeah, I don't really care.
I know.
I'm not going to go out of my way. But if it's going to record on my PVR and I could just click a button and watch it, beautiful.
And the thing about it is, for me, if I had to choose between it and Ring of Honor, at the end of the day, the acting and the production values, especially production,
yeah,
it looks better than WWE. Like,
or at least as good.
At least as good in a different way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, I mean, that's the thing about it. It's the first thing that looks like competition. Ever.
It does. It looks way better than...
Yeah, wait till you see some of the shit that happens the later in the season.
It probably looks better than Impact, but who'd know?
Who'd know?
So, yeah. Speaking of which, did you see this? We were talking about the streaming and stuff. BBC is coming out with a streaming channel thing.
Mm. Like so, a Netflix for BBC.
Like a WWE Network.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, say what you will, and people say that, like, Vince is out of touch and such, but, like, he pioneered this thing, the WWE Network. He was the first to offer this, like, streaming service.
What the fuck are you talking about?
And now, people are copying.
What?
What a pioneer. What?
What fucking idiot are you?
Hunter told me. He told me that they were the first. He was on one of the commercial things.
All right, let's move on past this.
Okay.
Let's go on to what we're really here to talk about.
Something more serious.
It is a little more serious.
It's a lot more serious,
It's a
actually.
Lot more serious, yeah. Yeah. And it's how we're going to do the rest of the show.
Yes.
Basically. Because the wrestling world is, let's say, rocked a little bit. With the news of Bret Hart being diagnosed with prostate cancer,
yes,
as he announced on his Facebook a couple days ago. Are you going to read the?
I can read it. Yeah, I got it right here.
Yeah, why don't you read it?
So Bret Hart just wrote, "It's with great remorse that I feel compelled to speak truthfully to my friends and millions of fans around the world. In the past few years, I spent more than enough time paying the price for all the years of trying to be there." Ever, being the best there was ever as a professional wrestler. I executed excellently, and my proudest claim was that I never seriously injured or hurt another wrestler in my 23-year career. I paid the price for all that fake wrestling. I'm not going to write with Mark Helfert. I now face my toughest battle. With hesitation and fear, I openly declare myself in a fight against prostate cancer. In the next few days, I'll undergo surgery with the hope of defeating this nemesis once and for all. So,
yeah, it's kind of a shortened version. Maybe we'll take actually this and paste it onto the post.
Yeah.
For people who haven't actually seen it, I'm sure most people have. Obviously,
it's really on the We Talk news. Wrestling Twitter feed.
It's on the We Talk Wrestling Twitter feed, which is?
At We Talk Wrestling.
Darn right it is. So, I mean, again, this hits a lot of people, pretty hard in a lot of ways. Certainly for us being here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where Bret Hart's from, it's very personal in that way too.
You had it on your Facebook,
yeah,
and that's where I saw it.
That's where you saw it from my Facebook.
And then no sooner did I hear it, but we've got the radio thing at work that goes over the intercom thing, and they're talking about it on the radio.
Yeah,
you know, and then it's you get home and it's like the first story on the news.
Yeah,
and then you know, and then you watch Raw and are cutting into it at every commercial break with it, right? And they mentioned it on Raw as well.
Yeah.
Had this picture and what have you. So,
and it was say Madison Square Garden.
Oh, Madison Square Garden.
A lot of celebrities, a lot of news sources, nationally, internationally covered it. It's big news. Because I mean, Bret Hart is one of the more famous Canadians of his era.
and
yep.
You know, and you know, like that family hasn't already been through enough, you know.
No, and it's Smith, just like, Smith Hart as well, just 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah, Smith Hart, his older brother, also has a prostate cancer, and that's already spread to his hip.
Mm-hmm.
And just seems like it's always cancer, you know. Like,
yeah.
Like, and there was a while there where it's like, you know, you had your Jake Roberts and Roddy Piper and Hacksaw Duggan, and wrestlers would get cancer. And they all beat it, and y'all just, it almost became a thing where, there almost, I think there was for a little while, it was almost a thing like, okay, people generally survive cancer.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
That seemed to be, and then you get someone like David Bowie here, who, 69 years old, passed away from cancer just a couple weeks ago. It's somebody with all the money and resources in the world for all the best care, and still can't beat it. Again, very personal for me, and we stopped doing the show last summer. Because my mother passed away from a breast cancer that had spread to her lungs and her brain, and for a while we were off air, and that was why.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, and again, 7 out of 10 women with breast cancer survive, 30% don't, and that's about the same percentage for prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And it's very personal with him being in the city, same city, and he was somebody I looked up to so much, and like I say, what happened with, you know, a member of my own family. It's really, really rocked me. I'm sure it rocked a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you hope for the best?
Well, the hope is...
My scare is pretty high for me. The scare level is pretty high because of being so personally affected by it recently.
The hope here is that they've detected it early enough. Not so much with Smith, unfortunately, he said it's spread.
Already.
But with Brett, the hope is that it's early... enough. So,
yeah, that is the hope, is that it's early enough. And, even if they, you know, he's gonna do surgery, hopefully they get it all. You never know for sure that he will, but.
Do you think that's his supercard picture?
I don't know.
It looks like a supercard picture.
It does. The picture we're looking at the Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
So, we just want to talk a little bit more about Bret Hart and what he's meant to us and some of the moments and the matches. Because, like I said, I mean, we start watching him. Like, one of my first feuds that really connected me to wrestling was probably, I think, 1984 or 83, in that range, in Bret versus Bad News.
Yeah.
In Stampede Wrestling for the North American Heavyweight title.
Yeah, the Commonwealth North American Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that was where Bret Hart, where I kind of realized, hey, this guy's from the same city as me. Like, I was young, right? But that's where it's kind of connecting to me then. Oh, yeah, this guy's... And Bad News Allen was just a wicked heel.
Oh, yeah.
Just an awesome heel.
I can remember that, because I remember the feud, and then go to WrestleMania 4, and I remember, like, they're teaming up against the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going, they hate each other. And of course, in Bad News, double cross the Hitman. Yeah. And it was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
People were like supposed to be shocked, and I'm like, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, I had the exact same reaction. I'm watching it too, in the corral or whatever there.
Yeah.
I'm watching it, and it was the same thing. It was like, can Bret really trust this guy?
Yeah.
You're watching it, and then that happened. And then Bret came back in and smashed the trophy afterwards, and I'm going crazy.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's coming full circle on a storyline.
Yeah.
And
then that was supposed to give Bret his singles push.
Yeah.
That didn't really take off, well. They didn't really...
I mean, partly, I mean, you put him in against Bad News Brown in the WWE, or WWF at the time, but the thing is, he's not winning, right? So, of course, anytime you start a singles push and the guy you're facing beats you,
anytime the heel goes over, right?
Yeah, you're not going to gain any momentum. But I mean, the reason why was that Bret came in and it was I always get a little upset when I hear the Legion Doom referenced as the greatest tag team of all time. Because to me, I'm like, I can't name a Legion of Doom, a good match from Legion of Doom, a 3-star match even. Like, you just, like, I can't think of it. Like, and that, I guess that's Hulk Hogan, and they're Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And I don't consider Hulk Hogan the greatest of all time. I consider him the biggest star.
Yes.
And I consider the Road Warriors the biggest stars as a tag team, but I don't consider them the greatest.
Yeah.
The same way I don't consider Hulk Hogan the greatest because, I mean, Al Snow does.
Yes.
But I don't because, to me, there was too many holes in the game, right?
Well, Bobby Heenan does too.
Yeah.
He does. Yeah. Because it's all about money.
Because it's all about money, and I get that. But
the best, there's a difference between, and it's even in the Observer Awards.
Yeah.
Because there's the wrestler of the year, and then there's the star of the year, essentially. Right?
Yes, that's right.
There's your technical guy, there's your wrestler, there's your performer of the year, and then there's your wrestler.
The wrestler of the year.
Yeah. You know? And it's, I look at it like, I remember watching the 97 Raw.
Yeah.
And Brett and Anvil come out during the Hart Foundation days. And it's like, the Legion of Doom or the Challenge Owen and Davey or whatever. And he's like, the Legion of Doom, talk about being the greatest tag team in WWF history. You're looking at the greatest tag team in WWF history.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, between the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs.
And the Midnight Express is another team that I look at.
Rock and rolls,
in the WWF, it's the British Bulldogs were the best tag team I ever saw. And the Hart Foundation and the Midnight Express were just a hair behind.
Wow, that was, and, I mean, but they didn't, I would go Midnights, but they weren't around that long. Like they split up Bob Holly and Bart Gunn so quickly.
Yeah.
That, you know.
I'm sorry, I meant the
Bombastic Bob.
Yeah, Bombastic Bob.
Bodacious Bart.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So anyways, I actually mean this, for me, the Stan Lane and Bobby Eaton version. For me, that's the, but, yeah, I mean.
They were unbeatable.
But right from the beginning, like, the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs, it's funny, you still watch, like, nowadays, WWE has had a storyline for tag team wrestling that's been the same. Like, for every match, a layout that's been the same now for, I don't know how many fucking decades.
Oh god, yes.
And, you know, and there's a slight twist on it now in that it's something that's an influence from like TNA and ROH. And the WWE has the heels get, like the baby faces start off strong for about 2-3 minutes.
Yeah.
Then the heels get heat for 15 minutes. And then the baby faces make their comeback and then you go to the finish. Either a screw job or a baby face win, right?
Right.
And in the independents and ROH and TNA for the tag teams when they had a lot of these smaller cruiserweight style guys and you still got this was, you got the guys, they start off in a pure wrestling match and it breaks down into a Texas Tornado style match within about 3 minutes, which is if you watch any ROH, tag team match, it's gonna break down into a Texas Tornado within, watch a Young Bucks match, it does.
Yeah.
And now you got, so now you got like, if you watch a Usos match or whatever, that's what it is, it's basically, babyface starts off strong, heels get heat, and then it breaks down into a tornado
and
match.
And then it's a tornado match.
Yeah. and so it's like, it's a combination, it's like a mesh. But if you go back and watch these World Bulldogs against Hart Foundation matches on like the WWE Network or, you know, maybe some DVDs, some of the Bret Hart DVDs or some Hart Foundation family DVDs, these things.
Baby Butt Wipes.
Yeah. Like you watch this and you go, okay, tag team wrestling can be as complicated and interesting a story and have as much psychology as any other match. Like it's completely different pace. It can be fresh. It can be just great wrestling. Like, it's possible. You know? And it's amazing to me that it doesn't seem like I know guys, they always had the opportunity to go back and look at, like, old tapes and whatever and ask, get whatever they asked for.
Yeah.
When you're working with WWE. It doesn't seem like old tag teams go back and look at all these old great old tag team matches. Or maybe they just don't have the power to implement that style of match anyways.
Yeah.
But
I see a lot of it in Gable and Jordan, actually. They don't,
yeah, but even they get
they,
the
I know
same.
They have to get a little bit formulaic, but they're at least,
their moves are innovative, but it's still much the same thing, whereas,
yeah.
Like I watched this last match here with them on NXT last week, it's the same, Gable starts off strong, then they got the heat on him for 15 minutes,
yeah.
And then Jordan came in, cleaned house, and got the head.
Yeah.
It's that,
yeah, that's what I said.
You know? Just because they have tag, and you can have great matches like that, but it's just, it's the same formula. So, I don't, like, but even the WWE style that we see, it, the way that it's changed over the years, mm-hmm. from what it was in, like, 1984 to what it was by 2004 and what it is today, even 30 years later.
Oh, yeah.
The influence from the Hart Foundation of Bulldogs matches as to what could be a match, even though you don't see the tag team matches like it, you see it more in the singles matches.
This, yeah.
Is where you see that this kind of stampede wrestling influence. It's very predominant. And Bret Hart, he's influenced largely by Dynamite, but Bret Hart's the one then who influenced all these other people.
Exactly, style, right? He's the one that, yeah, got the notoriety.
Yeah.
To do it, but I mean, yeah, I look at, oh god, like, I remember going to, London Gardens and, you know, having a Hart Foundation sign when they were heels. And
yeah.
I was at a house show and I'm
yeah.
sure nobody told me not to bring a sign. But, I don't know, like six. But yeah. they, yeah,
it's in a blue, you're in a Bullet Club shirt dancing in the front.
I was dancing yeah. to the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Dogs rock. But I had a Hart Foundation
yeah.
sign and just huge fans and people were giving me a hard time there. They're like, what? You like those guys? I'm like, they're awesome.
Yeah.
Like Bulldogs? I'm like, yeah, Bulldogs are good too. But Hart Foundation are awesome.
Well, the fact that the Hart Foundation, the Bulldogs were a great team, but the charisma, largely coming off, the Anvil. Yeah. But the charisma and just the little edge, the little mean edge, the things that they would do, like they would even after they turned babyface, they were still cheating.
Yeah.
You know?
Like
they maintained that edge for a long time, and that was one of the things about them. And the thing about, we talk about the Bad News Allen, the Bad News Brown, the Battle Royal.
The Double Cross.
The thing is, they were heels going into that match. Like yes. I say, the Hart Foundation was heels, they're both in the match. Anvil was in there, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, okay. When was he eliminated?
He got pulled out by the goatee by George the Animal Steel.
About how early in the match?
Oh, relatively early. About, yeah.
When he went out, I didn't think Bret Hart would do very well. But then again, he had done very well. Getting to be the last guy against Andre the year prior, or two
That's
years
right.
prior, right?
Yeah.
But the thing about it was, they were heels, but
certainly
Bret
didn't
Hart,
think he'd outlast Paul Roma.
No. Bret Hart was, I guess, according to Brett's book, and I don't think this is true, he had gotten to the point where he was getting second behind only Hulk Hogan for fan mail.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's why they decided that they would give him, like, they'd turn him single and give him a babyface push.
That's on page 6084.
Yeah, chapter 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but yeah, I mean, the babyface charisma was always there. It took them a while to figure out how to use it.
Yes.
And they stayed together as a team. I mean, after that failed push, they stayed together for, you know.
They go back together and
yeah.
they,
another 3 years.
Yeah, well, yeah. And by the end, I know they were kind of getting to be, I mean, their work was still good, but they were kind of, I don't know, I don't want to call them, they're kind of caricatures of themselves.
Yeah, to some degree.
I guess is the best way to put it. And mostly, Anvil.
Yeah.
But it just didn't have the same, pop towards,
no.
you know, when they're fighting, say, like, the three-man demolition.
Yeah.
You know, at 1990.
By the time their run was over, if you look at the teams that they're facing, compared to, like, we're looking at those early days, and we're talking about the Rougeaus and the Bulldogs and the Killer Bees, and, like, these great teams, the Hart Demolition at the time.
Yeah, but...
And then you're looking at the end, you're looking at teams like, yeah, I mean, the Nasty Boys and,
the Bolsheviks.
Yeah, like it's the tag team
division.
You
did have, though, you did have the Rockers and the Brainbusters in that mix, too, in that, you know, 89, 90.
Yeah, those two. The Rockers wouldn't last much longer either, though, as a team, only a couple more years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just mean in terms of matches.
But it was time for them to break apart. But,
yes.
But definitely, again, it was so personal. I mean, when they put Bret together with Kurt Hennig, they had been having a lot of matches on house shows and kind of a mini feud, but not a televised feud or pay-per-view feud.
Well, they had
a long time.
The thing was, is what happened was they did the split up
they did the split at WrestleMania 4, and, yeah. and he went up against the Bad News. And then they put the Hart Foundation back together.
Yeah.
And then almost immediately after WrestleMania, and I remember Mr. Perfect cutting the promo, and ironically enough, after he beat the Blue Blazer,
yes.
then he started talking about Brett. And you know, you're a second generation, I'm a second generation. And you say, you're excellent, oh, I'm perfect. So let's see who the, like, I can't yep. wait to get you. And so that was that summer of 89.
Yes.
Was Perfect and Bret Hart in singles matches. When they technically, I think on like Superstars and Challenge and stuff, like if Bret Hart was on, it was as a Hart Foundation member.
It was a Hart Foundation member. Yeah. But, I mean, I remember there was supposed to be a match here, I think it was actually even for Bret was supposed to get a match here in Calgary at the Stampede, the Calgary Stampede. They did a television taping. He's supposed to challenge Bulldog or Perfect at the time yeah. for the IC belt, and Perfect was hurt and couldn't show up. He ended up beating the Mountie.
Right.
And the thing was, I mean, we were waiting for the match. I mean, I remember they finally announced it for Madison Square Garden in SummerSlam 91.
Right.
And it was like, wow, Bret's gone immediately, like almost immediately as soon as they split up, he went from having the tag titles split up at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
7, and singles, and at the next major pay-per-view, SummerSlam, he's getting a single shot at the IC belt. And the thing about it was, we didn't know. I mean, I know, remember Bret Hart cutting the promo, we're about the same age, we're about the same size, we're both second generation, same type of deal, yeah. right? Like, we got a lot of similarities, but what we didn't know was, Perfect was hurt really bad, and because it wasn't the internet and everything then, and he had said, I want to wrestle Bret, I want to drop the belt there.
Yeah.
Like, he went out of his way. And then Kurt Hennig, everybody talks about all the time. He was a great guy. I mean, it's too bad his demons, he hid them too well to the point where he didn't get help. And yeah. they caused us to lose him early. Because he was a great guy, maybe a little too mean with his ribs, but not at the level of Dynamite Kid.
No. Right? I was gonna say.
Also not
or Mr. Fuji.
Or not as friendly as Owens either.
Yeah.
Ribs, right? But everybody loved him. But I mean, that, he was so hurt. And he went out of his way to make sure he got the belt to Bret and put him over huge.
Yeah.
He submitted to the sharpshooter immediately in the ring. And he had an awesome match. And like I say, he wanted to do it for Bret because he respected
him. Everything. And that was the thing, that's the thing with Bret is that he has so much, respect. And, you know, he talks about not injuring people in his 23-year career. And really, you remember a lot of his career as him being on top. But, like, you think about, like, how did he get on top? Well, you know what? He had the respect of Mr. Perfect, who mm-hmm. said, I want to put him over and I want to have a great match, and did have a great match and put him over.
Yeah.
He had the respect of Roddy Piper,
yeah.
who was the commentary, and on commentary put Bret Hart over like $1 million.
Yeah.
It's a perfect storm. Bret Hart was a star made from those two things. You could look at Bret Hart. I mean, yeah, obviously it takes his talent, but you talent alone doesn't do it. As no. you know, as so many people, you know, you find out. But it is a fact that with those two guys, he just look at it. Holy shit!
No,
it's not. It went from Bret Hart to Bret Hart.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. You know, between those two guys and the way they put him over, you know, at SummerSlam and at WrestleMania the next year. Yeah, I mean, Bret, the thing about Bret is, like, there's been a lot of better athletes in wrestling, you know? He was a good athlete. He was if you were looking, he would be one of the top probably 10 guys in, or maybe 20 best athletes in your high school.
Right.
But not like a world class athlete or even like an elite college athlete. And he was a good athlete.
Yeah.
But wrestling's athleticism, and it helps some, and some guys it's been important. Yeah. Like Chad Gable's athleticism helps, is one of the reasons why he's so great.
Dude, Jason Burke.
Yeah. Well, him too. Even his athleticism's been helping him
he's
a lot.
He's athletic.
You know, Kurt Angle's athleticism and Shelton Benjamin's as athletic as anybody didn't have the same thing. Like, athleticism's always counted. Dory Funk Jr. and Gerald Briscoe, these guys were great athletes too, but Bret, it was more about the storytelling.
It is
good enough to to do what he wanted to do, but it was more about the, it's more about the understanding of psychology and his storytelling. That's where Brett's, like, his ability to, see a match laid out in his mind, implement it, and understand when to do things, like, when to do something a little different to get a reaction from the crowd and read the crowd and these things. It's, that's where he, like, it's like Jake Roberts had that also, but was an even worse athlete. Like,
yes.
He didn't have, you know, Brett had like just enough athleticism to do all that and make these great matches.
Yeah. When I think about the mind, like if you say like, tell me who has a mind for the business.
Yeah.
Right? And three names come to mind, and it's, and Bret Hart's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Bret Hart, Pat Patterson, Jake
Roberts. Those are the three that you think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, Bret's, like that's the thing that's, like his ideas, his brain for doing finishes and all these different things. Like you can't teach that. Like that's something your mind is gonna work like that or not, right?
You can't teach that.
Thank you. But, I mean, when I think about best all-around in-ring performer as a wrestler, best all-around wrestlers, let's put it that way. Best all-around wrestlers in-ring, the two guys for me that are the best, and there's like, it's like, I wouldn't say Brett was the best babyface I ever saw. He's not as good a babyface as Ricky Steamboat.
Right.
But Ricky Steamboat didn't wrestle as a heel. Brett was as effective as a heel as he was as a babyface. He's one of the best babyfaces.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best heels. And so few guys are excel at both.
Yeah. You know the other one is? Fucking Jake Roberts.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But Jake Roberts, I don't know. He's probably still better as a heel. But,
he was.
But
he's still a good babyface.
But he was a good babyface too. But, I mean, Brett's even, like I say, I think the best in-ring wrestler I ever saw goes to Bret Hart, Kenta Kobashi. Those are the two to me are the top of the list. Because they were, like the thing about Brett is, he's a great wrestler, he's great as a heel, great as a babyface, great storyteller. If he could do it, needed to do some hardcore type of smash, he could do that. Brawling, if he needed to do something more high flying, he could do that. He was just, like he is, or he was, he's still with us obviously, but he's not wrestling.
Not wrestling, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, for me, he's the, like he wasn't a routine guy. And you talk about that. But like even on the, like that's the thing about him and you know, Kurt Hennig. You go on the road and they have these matches, they weren't routine guys. Like there are, it's typical, it always has been, and that's the generation before, like your Harley Races and whatever, they were routine guys and they did those matches and it worked for them.
You
why not?
You don't know Harley.
But Bret Hart wasn't a routine guy, is another thing. Like a Hulk Hogan was a routine guy.
I'm a poutine guy.
Oh, I love poutine. Yes, no, let's, I'll wait, out of respect for Brett.
Wow.
I know, I respect him a lot.
You respect him a lot. But yeah, I just look at, I mean, I think of Brett in terms of, is he, like you said, is he the best wrestler that I've ever seen? Probably.
Yeah.
In terms of what I, and again, when you talk about wrestling, a lot of it is
not the best performer. That's a different thing.
No, but wrestling, a lot of it is subjective.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, what do you like to watch? What I like to watch, I remember watching something with my sister. This was probably 5 years ago now. But it was back before the network. Remember?
The Dark Ages.
But we had Vintage on the score. And it was, so we had the 1 hour show of classic matches.
I remember Vintage.
And one of the Vintage main event was Brett and Davey Boy against Anvil and Owen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just like so great.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and my sister was saying to me at the time, it's like, you know, they don't have this good wrestling anymore.
No.
And that's what it was. And that was with Bret Hart. You could talk about him and Jerry Lawler. Him and Hakushi.
Yes.
You know. Him and Owen, him and Davey, like just him and you know, Bad News, him and all sorts of Mounty and Kurt Hennig, like he just had all those different, and he could do it all with them. And he wasn't the best talker I've ever seen.
No,
but could he talk? Yeah, he could talk.
He wasn't the charismatic, you know, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes gonna get out there and just mesmerize you. But much like he was much like his talking when it was effective was much like his wrestling. Was he sucked you into the storyline and making you think it was real.
Yes.
And that's when he was a really effective talker. And he was effective enough at it that he was a better talker than he gets credit for.
When you look at all the things, you talk about how he was effective talker because he had the realism of it. And you look at the storylines that he had that when he was on top. And it was this guy that crawled his way to the top to win the World Wrestling Federation Championship. And he was, now that he was there, he finally lived his dream. He was going to be the fightingest champion in WWF history. And that was all real.
Yeah. And the thing is, and he only got that chance because of the steroid situation and WWE's, but he was Daniel Bryan before Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
He would not gone, they would have looked at him and said he's an IC, he's perfect IC. Champ, and no matter how much the crowd had loved him or wanted him pushed to the very top, if it wasn't for that situation that changed the dynamic of what WWE wanted presenters wanted as a top guy, it never would have mattered. He never would have got the chance.
Well, no.
And that's incredible. Like,
that's just not good.
No.
Not just great. It's just incredible.
It's just incredible.
But, I mean, I look at that and the promos that he was cutting about, okay, I've been here for fucking ever and finally I'm at the top.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna do my damnedest. I'm gonna fight everybody because I'm just, goddamn it, I'm just happy to be the champion and I'm gonna deliver, I'm gonna give everybody the shot.
That's it.
His connection was,
again, like a Daniel Bryan, this is again, it's that you feel like you were watching, like, you were part of the real guy's journey. The real guy that you didn't think was gonna get the shot, and when he did, you felt like, you felt like him.
A lot like Edge.
Yeah, but that's it. It's like these guys, like, he connected to the audience because he wasn't the cartoon character.
Well,
because he wasn't over top like a Randy Savage. Yeah. Randy Savage had a lot of things that were better than Bret Hart as far as charisma and personality and these things. But he connected to the crowd in a different way because of the opposite. Well, not because of the charisma, but because he was a real character. Whereas Randy Savage, for all his greatness, never felt like a real character.
Right.
You know?
But I look at that too, and I just like, we're talking about his realness and everything, and as I said, you go in and he's gonna be the fighting his champion. Fine. Then he comes in and he has the thing with Owen.
Yeah.
And it's all this family, I won't fight my brother, and I'll give him a fight, I'll give him a damn good, and it was all, seemed like a real brotherly rivalry.
Yeah.
And it continued on for years.
Yeah.
And then it was this, you know, loss at, then the turmoil with Shawn Michaels hits, right? And Shawn loses his smile and, you know.
Brett makes that real.
and Brett makes that real. And he's fighting Steve Austin and he makes that
real.
And then he tells US fans, American wrestling fans to kiss his ass.
And he makes that real.
And then he comes in back with the Hart Foundation, and it's Canada-US, and it's Canadian Pride, and that's all real to Brett. And so, it's all just, that's how you connect. And then you go, and, you know, he goes to WCW.
Yeah.
And it's all about meeting and wrestling is his favorite wrestler growing up, El Dandy. And that was real.
Long way to go for that one.
I kind of thought it would have gone through, but it's all true.
No, but
everything there
well, not that last
real.
Part.
Well, maybe not the last part, but everything he did in the WWF as the top guy, why he connected is because there was always that, I don't even want to call it a thread of realism.
No.
The thread was really, the thread was really the theatrics.
Yeah.
Everything else was real.
Exactly. And that's largely what, I mean, you look at a guy like Roman Reigns, why has it not, like, why did it get over for that one night, you know, when he won the title?
Yeah.
Because it really was supposed to win the title much earlier, and he did continue to work hard, and that, on that night when he finally got the belt, it's like, fuck, okay, he finally got the belt. He's waited a long time.
Yeah.
He's supposed to have it much earlier. There was, you deserve a chance. That moment was real. But as soon as you put him into the Royal Rumble and say, you're gonna finish, start at number one, you're gonna go through everybody goes, fuck, it's not real anymore. And that's when that's what's lacking. Like, it feels like a fake storyline.
And that's what my wife, not she able feels to make bad it. For Roman, and it's just like...
But they're not able to make it real.
Oh, you just can't do it, because no. They're fucks.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Brett.
Do you see the tweet that I wrote, by the way?
That's the thing about... John Cena was never able to make it feel real to the adult portion of the crowd. And
John Poopy Cena, you see.
Yeah.
See this one? Sorry, but... So Dolph Jobber beats Kevin Owens. Jesus Christ, WWE do anything right.
I mean, that, yeah.
You're during Raw.
Yeah.
So I understand your rant. Yeah. But getting back to the Hitman. I mean, again, and you look back at my favorite match still of all time is Bret Owen at WrestleMania 10.
Yeah, such a great match.
And just the, as I said, everything he was able to do, both high and low. I mean, they said, I mean, he had the feud with Jerry Lawler. And Isaac Yankum and Hakushi.
You know what? As dumb as that is, he was able to make the Lawler thing feel real. The Isaac Yankum, that was a little bit more of a stretch. But yeah. The Hakushi thing, he was able to make something out of that. Like,
not so much with Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
But he made a great, the match was great.
The match was great.
Because Brett's great.
Yeah. It was just...
Yeah.
You know.
I'm angry at you because you stole my jacket. No, you tough to make that real.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but I just look
that's at... That's up there with a fighting over a shampoo commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, Japanese people, what's the deal with your nasty hair? You need to be like me, Booker T, and use Nakamura shampoo.
Shinsei Nakamura?
Yes. It's his own line of shampoo. That's why he had to come to WWE.
Yeah,
it's inevitable. They own the rights to his shampoo.
That's
right. How's he gonna make any money?
That's right.
Shit sticky. Back and more.
So anyways, back to Brett. What were you saying?
Well, I mean, again, I prefer to, we're talking about Bret Hart now, I think, again, he ended at the Hart Foundation. The WCW, and everything that went, but then I look at a couple of things. I remember going to his book signing.
Yes.
And Mo's like, I can ask him this. We're like waiting in line for this. Oh, I can ask him about the Iron Sheik. Ask him about this. He's got a good sheep story. He asked him this. And then we got up there to sign his book, and Mo's just like, and I just standing there smiling.
Oh yeah, I was like, at you. Thank you.
Yeah,
he just looked at me. Yeah, thank you.
But
I did interview him at the Expo, and it's on We Talk Wrestling. It's only like a 10-minute interview.
Yeah,
and I wish I had asked him the question of him replacing Pat Patterson as the guy on finishes for big matches because that's what they needed.
Right.
But I think it was a good little interview. He gave us some interesting insights into Bruce Hart and Triple H and Kevin Nash and stuff at the time, so.
Well, I don't know that he gave, I don't know if there's any interesting insights to be given on Bruce Hart.
Well, there was.
But I just look at, you know, Brett and then, again, him coming back.
Yeah.
And when,
I said it at the time, I'm like, Brett came back that night. The stuff with Sean.
Right.
Then the Vince stuff, because the Vince stuff ended in an angle. I was like, I could stop watching wrestling right now and finally feel like I have closure.
See, I said that after WrestleMania in Phoenix, the Raw after WrestleMania in Phoenix. Shawn Michaels come out, did his big retirement speech as the main event.
Yeah.
Bret Hart came out and talked about how, you know, that this has just been after Stu goes in the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. and Bret talks about how, you know, he could feel Davey and Brian and Owen and his mom and dad, and then they're just sending waves down that are heaven sent.
Yeah.
And that's when the crowd started chanting Owen.
Yeah.
And he had the Owen, he opened up, he had the Owen and Brett, where Brett's got Owen in the headlock.
Yeah.
Shirt that he's wearing, he opened it and the crowd went nuts. And
yeah.
Brett finished his career, or finished his thing and walked away, and you had Brett and Sean finishing and tying, and that was, and at the end of the show, that's when I could have been like, yeah. I'm done, Gus. It's closure. But when Dennis Miller, you know, when when I never forget the Slammy Awards.
I know, I remember.
And Vince, and he's like, who do you want to see be a special guest host of Raw?
Yeah.
And Desmond goes, Bret the Hitman Hart, and people go nuts, and I just like fucking text you, I'm like, shit, Bret's coming back.
And I was like, fuck off,
like,
no
whatever. I'm like, Dennis Miller just said,
I don't
like,
care.
I don't give a fuck. And
I, was like, I was like, it's a swerve.
It's just a thing, yeah. Because they had been doing that before. Remember the Shawn and Hulk Hogan build?
Yeah.
And they'd done it with Kane and Matt Hardy. And,
yeah. You know,
but, yeah, and then they make the announcement that Bret's fucking coming back. Yeah. And on Raw. And it was
and that was different because he'd already come back for the Hall of Fame, but he didn't show up on their TV.
He wasn't Mania.
He wasn't Mania. He said he didn't want to be, like, he went into the Hall of Fame, but he did not. He wasn't there yet. He hadn't forgiven them yet.
No.
Actually be back with the company.
That's right. Had Benoit offed his family yet?
No.
But the,
neither one, no.
Okay. So.
Both happened out.
Okay, because he's coming in, and it's just like Bret and Shawn and Vince, and they're all just there.
You could have just said that Benoit thing happened.
What are they going to do?
That's so graphic.
Hmm? Graphic? Yeah. Off his family is now graphic?
Yes!
Jesus Christ.
You call me Mom.
Ho? But I remember that, and you came over.
Yeah.
And it was an event, and TNA was on the same
night.
Well,
TNA was it was like the first. I don't know if I hadn't been that excited for a long time to watch wrestling. I haven't been that excited since for a long time.
I hadn't been that excited to watch it, and I don't think I got that excited again until probably Mania.
Yeah,
you know, but it was.
But it was the idea that like TNA was maybe going to actually become competition,
and
like the full night. Right?
We had Hogan and Jeff Hardy showing up, and that was the whole Bam and all that stuff happening.
Yeah, you had what's his name trying to escape from that cage?
Homicide.
Trying to escape from that awful looking cage. Yeah.
Jesus.
I remember we were actually sitting there going, man, now Raw's gonna come on. We don't know when Bret Hart's gonna come on. And the first hour of that Impact had been good, and we're watching,
yeah.
We're like, should we keep with this, or should we come back to this and after Raw, or what are we gonna do here? And we're like, Bret Hart. Like,
yeah.
And even that night, I remember we were the only ones. Like, a lot of people watched that first hour, and as soon as Raw came on, they switched over, and it was Bret Hart. Bret Hart was the counter program.
Oh yeah.
And, cause that was after TNA had announced all that shit.
Yes, and it was just like, I don't care what TNA announced, Bret Hart's gonna be on or off for the first time in whatever many years. So it was, yeah. That would have been 2010.
Yeah.
So.
No, earlier. In 2007.
No. No. 2010. Trust me, I know.
Okay.
And so Benoit head off his family.
Neat, I guess so then. Yeah.
So, you did then have, Bret had been, he did it the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, because Bret, the Benoit thing was 2007.
I was trying to think of because Bret had gone into Hall of Fame, and Bret was on, did that interview for Vince McMahon Appreciation Night.
Remember? That's right.
Because they had that.
And he wasn't, you're right, but he wasn't back yet. He just said,
he was
punch him, and he said he didn't know that it was for the Bret Hart appreciation, like he didn't know that it was for that angle. Otherwise
yeah.
He wouldn't have done it.
Yes.
That's right.
And then, yeah, it's hard to forget because you had, Snuka and Cheeky.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. But, I understand Snuka spent a lot of time.
Yeah, that's right. Cause he went into the Hall of Fame in 2006, so that was.
Yeah. That's right.
But,
I understand Snuka spent a lot of time with Chris Benoit during that role. But, you had, yeah, so he come back on Raw, and then he was back, and then he was back, and it was like, he won the U.S. title.
Yes.
Like, that's dumb.
It is dumb, but you know what it was he went on the tour in Europe, and he was, it would be in tag matches, and he would just come in at the end for the finish, and put people in a sharpshooter. And all the guys on the roster, Cody Rhodes, and, all the guys, everybody who was,
in that level and was working with it, everybody would be like, can I take the sharpshooter and lose to you tomorrow night? Like, everybody in the roster was begging to be in the tag team matches out of, again, respect, right?
Yeah.
To be the guy, it's like, I'd love to do the job to you and to tap out to the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Like, they all wanted to do it.
And then he was at that SummerSlam.
Yeah.
In that, against Nexus.
That's right. That's right.
And so that was, probably was the last in-ring thing, like, that he'd done. But,
yeah, as far as a full match, I think so.
Yeah.
Cause there was that bit where, CM Punk tried to punch him and he countered and punched Punk.
That's right. That was
probably like 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he was, I mean, he didn't do anything, he just came out to answer the John Cena challenge when he said Sami Zayn.
That's right. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's probably his last appearance, wasn't it?
It
was on TV, a WWF TV appearance.
I'm pretty sure it was, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
he was the general manager for a little while and that didn't really work, but, you know.
Well, general managers just didn't really work. But, I think, yeah, I mean, again, I look at
but
that.
But again, it was really more respect.
I look at that spot, I mean, again, so much more in terms of Bret Hart when he was, you know, against Dynamite and against, and against Bad News and Stampede.
Hart made, on June 11, 2007, Hart made his first appearance on Raw since October 27th. 1997.
Yeah, what day?
It says, on June 11th, 2007, when he appeared, when he appeared in a pre-taped interview.
Yes, okay, so that was the Vince McMahon appreciation night when the memo blew up. Yes, yes. Okay.
He re-signed with WWE in late 2009, and on December 28th, 2009, when it was announced, and he was the guest host for the January 4th Raw, head-to-head with Tokyo.
Right, yes. As competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want some competition.
So so it was June 4th, 2010.
January 4th.
Yeah, what I said.
June.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, June was 2007.
Yeah, that's what I said.
When,
and then it was January
4th. It was January
4th, 2007.
The 4th.
What?
In 2000.
What?
And?
One beer.
What?
Alright, so anyways, what were you saying?
Well, I was just gonna say, I mean, I look at Bret Hart from pretty much all of the 80s.
Yeah.
And pretty much all of the 90s.
Yeah.
So that's 20 years.
Yeah.
There. Of just unbelievable. I mean, I made fun about the El Dandy and the WCW thing, but I mean, he had the steel plate.
That
in Toronto,
was awesome.
Right?
Which was... He made the most of what they gave him. It's just unfortunate they didn't give him shit. And he threw a bunch of ideas at them, and they didn't take them, and then they blamed him for not having any passion left.
The whole point was, like, I mean, the whole fucking point, because it started, it was immediately after Hogan lost to Sting, was to build Hogan and Bret for Starrcade 98.
Yeah.
And Hogan was like, that's the way it was, that's the way it is, that's the way it's always gonna be, brother. Like, that started, he started using that catchphrase, all in like towards the end of December and through January, and then it just got dropped. But you could tell that's
they didn't use them. They didn't use them well. Like like right from the beginning, they didn't want Hulk Hogan didn't want him at the top of the card, and I mean, it's a shame because I don't think there's ever been somebody hotter coming into a company ever.
Oh yeah, no,
ever,
no,
and I could have booked 15 different angles that would have made them huge money over the next year.
Yeah.
And they put him together with Ric Flair in an angle that made big money.
Yeah.
Once on pay-per-view. Yeah. And that was it. Like, yeah.
I know, and even that, like, again.
Even that could have, didn't maximize his potential. No. Though it was huge, though, because people finally got a chance to pay for it.
What needed to happen, and what, all that needed to happen, was you had 1998 for Bret Hart should have been two programs.
Yeah.
It should have been the first half of the year, should have been Flair.
Yeah.
You have your Flair match, Bret wins, Flair hates it. So then he's got Davey Boy and Anvil come in with him, right? So you've got your Horseman and your Heart Foundation.
Yep.
Right? That you can have combination of second from the top underneath the NWO stuff for until June. And then it blows off with another match with Flair and Brett and Cage or something anyway.
Yep.
That Brett wins.
Yep.
And is the babyface and Hogan, and then you steer back into Hogan while never really dropping Brett and Hogan in the first 6 months.
No, always referencing it.
Yeah.
Never, but just teasing.
And then starting to build after the Bash at the Beach.
And then at the Bash at the Beach, yeah, exactly, and then you build towards Starrcade, and it's Starrcade 98, then,
it's Hogan and Brett.
Yeah. And, what's his name? The referee, Patrick.
Oh, Nick Patrick.
Nick Patrick, fast counts, or slow counts, or whatever fucks up the finish.
Yeah.
Because Hulk Hogan gets in his ear.
Yeah. Hogan puts Brett.
Brett's supposed to go over.
Hogan puts Brett in the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
And Nick Patrick says, ring the bell.
Ring the fucking bell.
Ring the fucking bell.
Yeah.
Give me those fucking rebates.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, that.
Hulk Hogan didn't want to do business. That's the thing.
Hogan just, yeah.
He didn't want to do business.
He didn't like business. He made him funny without doing business.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
absolutely. Yeah. And Brett didn't do badly himself.
Well, no.
But, still. Yeah. So, I think that's a good way to end it here.
I think of Bret Hart, as I said, I watched him for 20 years in the ring.
Yeah.
You know. And before, when I think of Bret Hart, I think of that, I really think strongly of the 90s, sort of saying that 5 year period of about 92 to 97 is when I think of Bret from, you know, being Intercontinental Champion, Wembley Stadium, winning the title, like I've said it on the show before, the real first and the biggest holy shit moment that I can think of is when, you know, Mean Gene announced on the, you know, to open Superstars in October of 92. Said, let's welcome you to the World Wrestling Federation
Champion. And I'm like, oh, Ric Flair again. Because even Ric Flair hadn't had the belt that long at that point. I'm like, remember actually what he said, and he goes, the new WWE, and I'm thinking to myself, you're still calling Ric Flair new? I mean, it's been like 3 months,
yeah.
4 months.
And I'm like, oh, Macho Man went back. And then, because that was the feud, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Macho Man won it back. And it's Brett Damon Harvard, brother. And I'm like, holy shit.
I was in my bed. I fucking jumped out.
Yeah.
I went crazy. Yeah. That was before the internet, before dirt sheets could ruin anything.
Yeah.
That was the surprise. The last amazing surprise. We'll probably ever get, we had and we'll ever probably have anything like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Just remarkable.
But wow, yeah, I mean, and so that really, and going all the way up to that Heart Foundation, that you know, all of
the
that.
The Canadian Stampede event, that's one of the WWE's greatest pay-per-views of all time.
And it turns out,
it's just a homecoming for Brett and the other guys and a celebration of the Heart family in the city in front of 14,000 wrestling fans. It's just,
which is everything awesome. Everything that made sense about, you know, my fans turning on me and, you know, and this is unfair and everything is real and this, so that 5 year period is that encapsulates to me sort of how all the, I don't want to say all the fond memories, but the fondest time period memories I have of Bret Hart. So I will remember those and I'll be thinking of Brett.
Why we still love wrestling to this day, Bret Hart is one of the big key reasons why, right?
Oh yeah.
Right up there. And you say, for me, if it's very personal, when you watch a guy before, you know he's good, before anybody else knows he's good. And, you know, you watch him starting off in your city and then he ends up getting that national stage and then people realize he's good, but you still know he's better than they think he is.
Yeah.
And he finally gets that recognition. You're part of that journey. And, like I say, it comes from your city and everything. So, we just want to wish the best to, Bret Hart and to, the Smith Hart.
And Bret Hart, Smith Hart, the whole Hart family.
Yeah.
Except for Martha.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, she's not part of the Hart family.
That's true. All I know is the Black Heart. Martha is the Cunt Heart.
She's keeping him out of the Hall of Fame still.
Yeah, I mean, it's to end on a, call it a downer, but, I mean, if you just celebrate Brett and, as I said, we're thinking about Brett and the family and, you know, we'll just, I wrote the hashtag, kick out of cancer. Yeah. That's what he's doing.
Kick out of cancer.
Kick out of cancer.
That's the hashtag.
And so, I, certainly hope that that's it, so. I think that's, that'll wrap the show up here.
We'll OUT on that.
So, we're at We Talk Wrestling. I mentioned on Twitter, facebook.com/WeTalkWrestling. WeTalkWrestling.com is a fabulous motherfucking website. So, that's gonna do it. In the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another edition of We Talk Wrestling. Good night, folks.
Enough here.
Hey.
I wouldn't wanna eat on a podcast.
Yeah. Remember when Vince Russo called you fat?